Hi guys, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery, and I'm located in Van.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Hola, just so you know, we are doing our part two to our two-part long episode that was started last week. So if you haven't listened to the first part, go back to last week and listen to that one, or don't. Do whatever you want. but we are continuing on this week with M. Stevens, Pazful at Pazful Designs, and it's a intriguing conversation. It was awesome to talk to her, so I hope you guys enjoy.
Cool. So
interrupt.
Can I'm interrupting this podcast to tell you that my friend just found 4 vintage Five Lines bowls at the Goodwill.
Wow. That is so cool. Where? In Indianapolis?
In Washington. And I was like, did you buy them? And she's like, yeah.
I was going to say, she did.
Is it right by where it was in Monroe, or is it some other city nearby?
No, it's in Monroe.
It's in Monroe.
Is she selling them? I want a vintage Five Lines bowl. Is she going to resell on eBay?
She doesn't even need them. She has so many fucking bowls.
Was it like a little bowl, or was it a cereal bowl or a pasta?
No, they're the pasta bowls.
Oh, wow.
I think they're pasta bowls from they're pasta bowls from one of the flash sales.
Oh, that's so cool. Wow. I think that's like, do you feel like you've peaked? Because I feel like that is, like, so cool.
Oh, I peaked when one of my customers sent me a picture of my cup in Goodwill in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That was a full peak. I was like, damn! Washington, okay. I get. North Carolina, I am honored.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I ran into a situation because a lot of the markets here in Denver, I don't know why, they're like handmade and vintage, and I'm like, they're not the same.
Indiana's like that too.
Ran into a situation where somebody was a vintage seller selling my fucking vase that they found at a Goodwill for 50% off or like 70% off, like so much cheaper than what I was selling my vase at my booth for. Mm-hmm. So that was cool.
But wow.
My mom went and bought it. She's like, look what I just bought.
I'm steal.
Like, yeah. But she's like, I just wanted it off the shelf. And I was like, thank you. Yeah.
That's hilarious. So
that was kind of like a weird situation. But I was like, okay, well, they don't know. Like, they didn't know that I was going to be here. Like, it's kind of obscure. Okay, so yeah, I did the math, Ryan, and your operating expenses, I'm looking at my sticky note, you kept it at 38.9%. That's
like
really
good. I don't
know
what
really
that good. Is, but it was like 58K of profit.
She's doing this because she's in the restaurant industry. She's in the restaurant industry, so everybody, her whole restaurant life has been like labor.
Mm-hmm.
nobody knows that unless you've worked there.
Also, yeah. I don't think the expenses account for what I pay myself in there either. Because it's all my money at the end of the year, so I don't know that that's accounted for in there. But
no, it's not. It's just the $37,000 in expenses that you posted on your Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
My percentage was 72% operating expenses.
You also probably bought a lot of things last year.
I sure did.
To get the studio going, and
sure
you probably
did.
Drove a lot more.
Sure fucking did.
So that hopefully sure those did. Those are ones that you're not going to have to claim a lot of next year. Or they're deprecating items, so claim part of it.
I just got a little vomity feeling, honestly. Just a little. But, again, it's good for people to know that some years your operating expense is going to be at 72, and some years it's going to be at 38. And what you want to do is make sure that your expense and operating, or what you're making in profits and your expenses, don't stay at 72% year after year.
Yeah.
Like, that's what everybody should take away from this. It's like, yeah, it's a fluctuation. I'm doing, you've already had your, like, investing time into your business, it sounds like. Like, you have your kiln, you have tables. You've got shelves.
I run things in the ground, too, so I don't buy new things very often.
I
bought some Advancer shelves, but...
Ooh, nice.
Here and there.
Worth it?
Oh, yeah.
My operating expense now that I have the studio and that it's, like, is literally nothing. Last year, I probably spent $300 on clay.
Yeah.
And maybe glazes. Probably like $400. That was it.
I'm not that organized to be able to, like, say off the bat what all of, like, building out a studio.
It's a lot. Like, I'm not organized. I just didn't buy anything because I have everything. And once you have everything, you don't need to, like, buy all these tools all the time. Then you don't have to pay for anything.
Yeah. I invested in a coach this past year, which...
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I needed it for my mental health. I was definitely... Because I've been doing this as a side hustle, and I've always been in the restaurant industry, and for the, like, last 7 years, I've been doing this as a side hustle, and it's like, I want to get out of the restaurant industry. I really do. I want to do art full time. And, you know, I think it was like seeing how Kurt pivoted so successfully within his own business, it, like, caused me to have, like, this wake up of, like, okay, whatever you're doing isn't...
Do you mean
really
pivot
working.
When he first got into it full time, or when he shifted to take on the extra load when you started working for him?
When he pivoted this past summer, essentially, to, like...
Okay, when he had to lay people off.
Lighten the load.
Yeah, I mean, that was, from a business perspective, 1,000% he needed to do that. Like, he downsized from 2 studios to 1. He cut his labor in half, like, and he didn't spend time, like, dwelling on it. I mean, he did, but, like, efficiently, you know? Like, he didn't do it without thinking about it, but it was, like, when he realized mathematically this is what needs to be done, he did it, you know? And I think that's so... crucial for entrepreneurs. It's like, we don't have the luxury to bleed money, essentially.
Right.
And, you know, hem and haw.
Yeah, seriously.
And it sounds like you're also understanding that bleeding time with your driving is, like, you're through with it. You've put in the time of driving
for
back and forth
and the money involved
in driving.
Well, I made it work as best as I could. And again, so fucking thankful for all of the people who have let me use their studio, fire in their studio, because I'm telling you right now, my, you know, operating expense ratio is at 72%. That's without me having to pay rent. Like, let's just be very clear on that. How lucky I am that I haven't had to pay rent, you know, for studio space or for kiln space. You know, like, that's a huge saving of my own money. And that's why I've done it for as long as I could. And then this past summer, like, I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't see a way out of the restaurant industry, honestly. And it just was so dark that it kind of caused me to also, like, not be motivated to make art, because I got to this point of, like, what's the point? Like, art is what makes me the happiest person alive. I know with every fiber of my being that I should be doing this, but I don't see how I'm going to get there. And so that's why I hired an art coach, And I mean, that really, that helped so much. And it was not cheap. Like, that was a luxury that I am so happy that I could, that I invested in, honestly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did not, there was this past summer, there was definitely a moment where I was like, yeah, I don't like this feeling. This is not, this feeling can't stay. Yeah. So, I mean, again, but I like want to normalize that. Like I don't want people to look at my Instagram page. Like I want them to see that it's happy because it is, and I want to make happy art, but I don't ever want them to think that like it's better than what it is, I guess. Like,
That's easy.
Know? It's definitely not easy. And I mean, I'm still not at the point where I can go full time. You know, and I've been doing this as my side hustle for 7 years, you know, so I want people to like say nice things to themselves. If they're looking at, like, I don't want them to think that I'm doing my art full time. I don't want them to be comparing their own journey to mine and not having all the facts, you know?
Mm-hmm. So many people think that I do it full time. And I'm like, I don't know what I can do to clear that up. I mean, I don't want to start posting about my day job and like, that's way more work. So, you know, I don't know how to make that more clear, but I hope that with in the recap, I do talk about that. But it's like, hey, I want it to be this is possible for you, that you don't have to do full time to make this income, but also you can see the work that I put in of the 100%. Hours that I'm doing work. So I'm also taking it seriously that it is something that is not treated like a third or fourth priority because it's a side. Right. It is a top priority or one of the top priorities.
So true. Yeah.
And I think you have to treat it that way or else you're not on a path to be in that, you know, that dream goal that you have.
Yeah, 100%.
If you're not using, you know, I get not everybody looks at the data and analyzes it and stuff like that, but you have to have some numbers to help you or else you're like, if you go on the whim and you just go with it, and just see where it takes you. I don't think that's a recipe for long-term success. I think you're going to get burned out or you're going to be like, people aren't buying in. I don't know what to do. It's like,
Again, like I said, we don't have that luxury to hem and haw. Like you have to be able to identify the issue. And if you cannot identify your own issue, then you got to find somebody you can trust that can point out the issue for you. And you got to take that advice and not be like, not take it personal. Cause it's like at the end of the day, like there's one thing, like when people are like bitching about the algorithm, I'm like, oh my God, I can't, like, I don't want to hear it because you know what? This is social media. There's nothing in Instagram that says, it's our responsibility for your art to sell. Like, it's a platform. Right. You're choosing to use it, you know? So, like, maybe your photos suck. Maybe your captions suck. Maybe your clientele, maybe your customers who are seeing your photos, maybe they don't know your story. Maybe you're not sharing that with them. And, like, those are all personal choices that you are making. But, like, that's not the algorithm.
And I don't think most people are willing to change with the times. They get complacent with doing what's worked in the past, but they aren't willing to adapt and adjust and also stay creative with the content creation side, that you have to have a genuine interest in wanting to produce the content to be interesting. You can't just throw things up and expect that you're going to get results. Like, I think... I think Kenny Singh was posted. I didn't realize how many times he posted last year, but he was sharing how much he posted.
Oh yeah,
and it was like 35 times or something. And it's like, his stats were great. You see his process.
Incredible.
And you're like, he spends hours on these videos. Who is that? Tony from Turnt Studios. Kenny Singh.
Oh, Kenny. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you only produce that many, like, Instagram posts? And it's like, you mm-hmm. understand the time and investment it takes to produce that. So it's like, you can't just throw things up and expect it to happen yeah. for you. You have to iterate, that, like, you have to experiment, you have to have that yeah. curiosity.
You have to have that, like, reality check. Like, I'll just say it out here. My content last year kind of fucking sucked, honestly. Like, it wasn't my best work. I was going through a lot of shit. Like, and my energy levels were kind of zapped for a lot of the year. And it reflected. Like, I did not grow my account the way that I wanted to, but I'm able to look back and be like, you know, that was me. Like, my content sucked. Like, you know, like, I wasn't posting my best content. So my numbers are pretty reflective of the content that I posted. Mm-hmm. And that's not yeah. like that's not me talking negatively to myself or being too, like, it's like, no, that's just reality. Like, yeah. Okay. That tracks. And like, great advice for people who are, you know, just starting out in this, look at an account whose growth is the growth that you want and mimic what they're doing. I'm not saying mimic their style, don't copy their work, but mimic their social media techniques. How often are they posting reels? What angle? What's the lighting? Look at that. Process right now. Process reels are, like, top notch.
That's the thing, yeah.
And you know what reels I hate doing? Process reels. I hate them.
Yeah, it feels like an interruption to your flow, and the lighting's probably not the best, and well, you're and probably I was not gonna say, as...
I get stuck in, like, the analysis paralysis of, like, I know that the lighting that is in the bedroom where I make my work, it's bedroom lighting, and I put in different light bulbs, and I'm trying to do the best, and I've got the ring light, and I've got some other. I just don't feel confident about it, and that shows sometimes in the reels that I make. You know, because it's like, it does kind of look, in my opinion, like, well, I'm doing the best I can, but I'm not enjoying this, and I don't feel good about it. And, yeah, like, it's like, if you're not even interested in your own video, like, you can't really expect other people to be interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I do think I want to get one of those, like, Canva. Have you guys seen those on your Instagram feed? The Canva, like, light thingy?
No. Is it like arm?
I think so. It's...
Yes, the arm thingy to make video content.
Is like, that, I feel are, like... you, are you getting that so that it gives you more confidence that it's going to just do the trick for you and you're going to all of a sudden enjoy it?
Well, let's just be clear. I did just buy, like, a $7,000 kiln. So it's on my, like, Amazon wish list.
It was not $7,000, was it?
For everything. Like, vent, shipping, all the, like, shelves.
How much is shipping for a kiln? I'm curious.
Hold, please. I'll pull up my invoice. Also, the people at Clay Kings, like, the ladies.
Amazing.
Shout out Savannah if you're a friend of the pod, but she was phenomenal. She was so helpful. I, like, want to kind of be best friends with her.
Quakey got some things going on over there.
All right.
Yeah, they're good shit.
They are good shit. All right, you guys want to hear this? I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Gut KM 12-27 with 3-inch brick. 240 volts. The price is $4,813. I am a little bougie. I did a controller upgrade. And I
That's the touchscreen one, right?
Yeah. That I can, like, do it from my phone if I want to.
Right.
That was $346.
Yeah.
The furniture kit for all of the shelves and posts, yada yada yada, $778. Not gonna lie, that shit is expensive. More than I wanted it to be. kiln vent, also more expensive than what I thought it would be.
About $500 or $600, right?
$641.
Yeah. What kind is it? Is it the EnviroVent kind of thing, or?
No, the EnviroVent is even more expensive.
VentMaster?
Whatever.
It's the standard one.
I just got the basic vent because it's going to go out the building. Then they drill for the vent, $25. Right. Okay. Freight shipping, only $170.
Oh, that's not too bad. Okay.
Not bad.
I mean, the kiln I was expecting about $3,000 or something. The vent, reasonable. The furniture kit, $700. Oh my gosh.
Well, how much did you just spend on your advancer shelves, though?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not getting advancer shelves, let's just be very honest.
You know what you should do over time? Well, over time, I'm looking at their seconds. You should look for those because they're still going to be expensive, but I just got a 15-inch one that I'm going to use for spoon rest because I put the 15-inch shelf inside of the 20-inch shelf. And it was like, I want to say it was $150, but.
I'm not going to be looking for advancer shelves for a hot minute.
That's a luxury purchase that is not needed.
That is a luxury purchase. You're absolutely right.
That's when I'm like trying to find expenses and I buy a couple advancer shelves.
I am trying to not look for expenses at this point.
I've had many years to my life like that.
Yeah. The tax, though, tax is like, am I allowed to say I hate it? Because tax is $544 on this sucker.
You may be able to get a refund on that because it's a machinery purchase. It might be. So you can check with the DOR and call them up and be like, hey, I just ordered a large kiln for my studio. Like, is this deductible? Like, the tax? Ooh. Like, do I need to be paying this tax? Like,
was a lot. But, you know, it is it's every day that I'm dropping $6,000, $7,000 immediately. So, ooh. Feels good, though. It is kind of silly. Like, Monday when I was talking to Clay Kings in Savannah, I was truly like, after that conversation and like getting the invoice, I was like, I need a nap. I am tired and I need a nap.
Wait until you pay that bill, that invoice for the studio.
Well, luckily I've been doing it in increments as they do the work. So
that's nice.
That seems like more digestible.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Denver, I'm sure you saw, well, the whole nation kind of got, like, that cold freeze. And so, like, even, like, they were supposed to do work that week. So I just, like, sent them $1,000 because I'm like, I'm just going to keep this momentum going. So now I'm actually ahead.
Because they still owe you time.
Yeah, because they still owe me time. But I just, like, my contractor is very organized, and he has a very detailed line-by-line item of what they charge me for and what I've paid and the dates and all this stuff. So I was like, cool, I was mentally prepared to give you this amount of money. Then we got the cold freeze. I'm going to still give you that amount of money because in my head, like, it's gone, so now we're good.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to take, I'm sure you probably were affected with work during that week too, so.
Oh, yeah.
You probably didn't make more money that week then.
Definitely not.
Or,
sure didn't. Yeah.
Sure didn't. Sure. I remember the day that I paid off a $25,000 loan.
Ooh, that sounds so nice.
That I got. God. It was so fucking stressful because, like, I paid it over the phone.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not comfortable. Like,
no.
I think I did it in two installments because I was too afraid to pay $25,000 over the phone. Sure. And I did it like $1,200 a piece or something like that. I was like, this is not an ideal situation. $12,000 at a time. Yeah.
I was like
this is not ideal.
Yeah. That's how, like, it felt writing a down payment for a house.
Wait, I'm so sad that I'm not going to see you two at Encica this year.
I know.
I need it. We need to make a trip out to Denver. We haven't been there in quite a few years, so.
Well, and you have many of us out there.
Well, when I'm in Denver, you can come and stay at my parents' house.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like April and May. Well, they don't live in Denver, but.
Well, they're close enough. I mean, it's like 45 minutes. You guys could do a studio tour with my studio, Liz's, John Hamilton, Kurt. I'm sure Dell would probably fly out too and stay with John. Like, they're doing family vacays all the time.
Yeah.
I fucking love Dell.
Make an event of it. Yeah, Dell's great.
We should. Oh my gosh, why not? Can we? We can. We're adults. We can do those things.
Yeah, we can do that. Let's have to figure out when.
Which part are we adults about?
About planning a get together in Colorado at some point.
Get together in Denver.
I'll be there.
People too. I'm so sorry for everybody else who I haven't given a shout out.
I think I'll probably be there in May. It keeps getting pushed back for me. Because I don't want to leave Utah.
Oh. Am I allowed to ask, what studio you're working out of, or are you not working out of
it? No, I am. I'm working out of the Tilted Kiln. I'm there.
Oh, nice. Totally.
We call it I'm the CVE, the Seasonal Volunteer Employee, and I know that doesn't
seasonal
add
starts
up.
With the S, though.
Yep, I was waiting for that. well, it does. It does start with an S, but not to Becca at certain times of the day. And so I was like, it's the CVE, the CVE. And Jesse's like, it's not. And I was like, well, it is now. But yeah, so I'm,
so you're,
I love it there. Yeah.
That's so cool. I've never been, but I'm so excited for Enseca in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Right?
Salt Lake City, 2025.
It'll be interesting.
Never been to Salt Lake City.
I haven't either.
The land of no parties.
Well,
it's not,
we'll bring
Salt Lake City does not have a nightlife. It's so funny because people that live near there is like, okay. There's no big studio. There's no nightlife. There's, you know, and so I think it'll still be fun, but it's going to be a little bit different than normal, I think.
Denver would be so cool if we could do Enseca here in Denver, but I don't think anybody wants to step up and help plan it.
They've done it in the past. It's been at Denver.
Yeah, but like a hot minute ago.
It was definitely a hot minute.
CIA is such a great airport to fly into. Like, it's a hub for so many major airlines.
Most people are flying through Denver just to get to wherever they need to go.
Exactly, to get to Park City. I think I'm going to drive.
Yeah, and how could you not love Denver and the Demon Horse? Like, how could you not?
Lucifer. I love Lucifer.
Lucifer!
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Hold, please. Hold on, we're going to show you. Hold.
Denver?
I will explain this while she's holding. Okay, yes. Denver has a statue that they have right at the beginning of where you go into the airport. And you have a t-shirt!
Demon horse, okay.
Okay, yes. So it's a blue stallion.
Mm-hmm.
Bronco, if you will. It's a blue Bronco-ing up in the air, and it's got red glowing eyes.
And it's huge. It's huge.
It's giant. It's giant. And my mom fucking hates it. She's like, it's awful. And everybody else, and like, it's a big controversy situation. And
it killed its owner.
Yeah.
Like, the artist who was making it, the artist died. Tragically, like, not under normal circumstances.
The artist owned the horse?
Well, the artist who's making the horse.
Who sculpted the horse.
The sculptor.
Oh, it was a sculpture. I thought it was supposed to be, like,
a
making
huge,
of a real horse
It's a huge statue. with red laser beam eyes.
Statue. Oh my god, it's perfect.
I always say hello and goodbye to it. I'm like, thanks for seeing me off, Blue. I love it.
Blue.
I don't even know if that's its name. I call it Lucifer. Because
the only reason that Emily flies, the only reason M flies is because of Lucifer.
Is to see this horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes my flying experience much better.
I'm sure there's got to be a plaque with it that talks about this.
Well, you can't actually walk up to it because there's no, it's like
a highway.
It's a highway. It's like between.
Big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I thought maybe it was inside the.
No,
inside the airport.
It's like huge. Tall.
Super tall. And it's like on the road that you're going in, like right where you go to
into
like the departures and
Yeah, this is my airport. This is like my flying sweatshirt because I got a representative.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Wow.
Yeah. No, Blue's great. Cool. Is there anything else that we should talk about?
How much money did you make last year? We never said that.
Oh, am I including the Kickstarter money or not?
Don't include the Kickstarter and then we can add that in.
Okay, so not including the Kickstarter, I made $26,000.
Okay. In profit? Yeah. Or no, 26,000 sales and then
72%. And I was really sad. I was, like, full disclosure, I was sad about that. But then, like, when you reflect, you're like, well, the numbers represent the work that you put into your business, and I had a rough year, so that kind of tracks. And I got super. I also realize now, because hindsight's always 20/20, I got super comfortable with my bartending gig, and not like again, I gave up doing markets to make more money bartending, and
right.
Financially, maybe that's what I needed to do because I am building out this studio. But for my business, maybe that didn't make the most amount of sense. I don't know. Mm. You know.
But it's good
maybe
to have the option
to, risk it.
To ebb and flow if you need to. If you need
exactly.
to shift and say, you know what, I'm really hating this art thing because I feel like I'm drowning. I'm just making constantly. I can't get out of the house. So you know what, I'm gonna pick up some shifts and. Instead, over the next
definitely month. A nice luxury to have that option for sure. And when you're doing such a big project like I am, it was kind of like I can't take maybe I'm gonna do well at a market. I'm definitely gonna do good as a bartender. You know, like
right.
I needed that option for like the latter part of this year. Okay, so then with the Kickstarter. I/we/ everybody who, you know, like donated, we raised, I want to say almost $22,000.
That's awesome.
Which was incredible. It was that was the hardest.
I didn't think you were going to get there. And then you had a few days,
hold it,
like 10 days left. And I was like, wow.
I think a lot of people didn't think that. I'm not sure where I was. I think I went through about 150 emotions, like flip flops, every single day.
Kickstarter, it was to build out your studio, just so everybody's super clear.
And buy the kiln.
Yeah.
So Kickstarter took about like 20% of that in terms of processing fees. And other fees and taxes. So like 20% of that 22,000 is gone, you know, to the ether. And then I had $10,000 in personal savings that I've put towards the build out and about $4,000.
How much was the build out?
I don't know. It's still going on. I don't know.
Is it going to be somewhere in the 30,000, something like that?
I think it's going to be closer to 30,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that just building the structure? It's not all the equipment and everything inside it?
Yeah. Yes. I would say, so I think it's going to come in at 27.
Okay.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what I've been
really. But then it's like, That's like with electrical, with the insulation, with the, you know, everything, you know.
Yes, yes. And it's a 200 square foot building, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we've already gone over the cost of the kiln. I don't have a single table that is level. So I will be spending money on tables because I've been using folding tables for 7 years and I'm not bringing a fucking folding table into that fucking studio. I'm not doing it. I want, I want a wooden fucking table.
Sorry. Are you going to pay Greg?
No. He's busy too, working for Kurt. Those Hammerlay brothers.
You gotta catch them before they build the estate over there at Hammerlay Manor.
You have no idea. Like, truly.
Greg was building out the fucking greenhouse at his house.
And it's gonna be massive what they're doing at Kurt's homestead. I think I'm gonna get some husky tables from Home Depot.
My studio mate Sarah has those. They're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's also a really good.
So many options. I'm a little overwhelmed.
There's also a really good build out that a lot of people on Clay Buddies use. That's it's like these four corners, and you just need to buy the plywood to put in into them, and then you don't have
Is this for a table or a shelf?
For a table.
Oh.
I'll try and find it. It's like four black corners, and like they have them at the tilted kiln, and they're great. They're great. I mean, like they're the perfect height. They're tall. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with like a foldable card table. They're very low, so like you are doing a lot of a lot of hunching. And I don't want to hunch.
I mean, I would guess with slipcast stuff, you want it at a reasonable height so that you're not picking up too heavy, but you're also going from a table down into a bucket or down into some reservoir.
I feel like a belly button height is a really nice height.
Yeah, it's a good height. It's about 30 Classic. Inches. 30, yeah, 34
you're
inches.
You're kind of right there at your center of gravity.
Yeah, belly button. So that is like... I've given up, like, a lot of the wants that I wanted for the studio just because, like, when you start sending out checks to the contractor, you're like, all right, the money I raised is kind of going away, like, pretty fast. I really wanted skylights, like, tubular skylights in the studio because I love natural light and I am in a basement bedroom right now. But I gave those up because those were going to be like $2,000. And I'm also like, okay, that can also come later. And
you probably have windows in the studio, right?
Yeah.
Hey guys, we are breaking up the podcast because we want to talk about our amazing sponsor, L&L. And we have some awesome things to talk about, especially now because Inseca is rolling up soon in late March. And so Ryan is going to tell you the kilns that they have available at Inseca for a discounted price that you are available to purchase if you so please.
Yep. All right. So if you're going to be in Richmond, Virginia between March 20th and 23rd for Inseca, we'd love to see you there. They are giving away the smaller kiln of the three that they have available. So this is the E18S3. This is a 2.5 cubic foot kiln. It goes to cone 10. They're giving it away.
Yeah, make sure you sign up for the drawing there.
Yeah, so you can stop by their booth anytime. I want to say between Wednesday, Thursday, early Friday, and I think they draw it Friday afternoon. So make sure to get entered in to win that. It's a good small size kiln. The next size up, which is the most popular, and actually the kiln that I got last year at Inseca, is the E23T3. That's their most popular kiln. It's a little over 6.5 cubic foot kiln going to cone 10 again. And that's a great one for if you're a studio potter or you just need something that's a good, you know, workhorse for you. You can get bisqueware and glazeware through that. And it's a great kiln. I have two of the
that exact same kiln body. So, and then the last one they have is the EQ28273, which is a production level kiln, is kind of how they label it. It's a 10 cubic foot kiln, and again, that goes to cone 10. So all these go to cone 10. You got different sizes available. And if you would like to get your hands on one of those, and we can get you connected with LNL, you can reach out to us through Instagram or through email. If you can email us at wheeltalkpodcast@gmail.com, we will get you connected with the folks over at LNL Kilns to give you more info so you can stop by.
Yeah. And all of those also have all of the Genesis controllers too. So that's really exciting as well. So you're going to also, if you need to look up pictures, you can go to hotkilns.com.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Hope to see you at NSECA. And make sure to stop by and tell LNL we sent you. Thanks.
Yeah.
So it's going to definitely be an upgrade from where you're at now.
1,000%. 1,000%. I just was like, skylights. Like,
right.
Yes. and then I was going back and forth for forever on the floor finish. And I am not doing, I was going to do an epoxy floor. I had some people who were like, we'll come out and help you. But that it's just so expensive, even like to do for 200 square feet, like, either I could do it with my, like, by myself, which I, like, feel somewhat confident, but, like, maybe not, I don't know. Like, sure, I could do it. I don't know. But to have it, like.
But it's a floor, you know. Yeah, it's kind of important.
It's pretty important. But it was, like, a minimum of, like, $2,500 to have, like, people do an epoxy floor for like the labor and stuff, and so I cut that out as well. And that I'm like willing to do, but like the table and the kiln, like those are non-negotiables for me. Everything else, I don't care. Like,
so what's the floor instead?
It's just gonna be super polished concrete.
Okay.
And I'll just wear some thick soled shoes so that I stay warm. Yeah. Oh, and then
and it's cleanable too. So
I have a mini split in the studio for HVAC.
What's a mini split? Oh, I see. Okay,
it's like a wall unit of heating and air conditioning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean that was like, truthfully, I can't remember. That was like, I want to say maybe $1,500 or $1,700.
Is that one of those that goes up? You install it up on the. On the wall, yes. And it, yes. You might see it in like Airbnbs.
Yes. Yeah. So that, like, that was a little bit more expensive. Like, I could have gotten like floor units, heating, not in the floor, but like a floorboard heating type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But then I wouldn't like have had AC and
need AC.
Yeah. Well, I'm of the mindset of like, I just want to do things right the first time around and then not do it again. So, I mean, yeah, the floor, I mean, it's a studio. Like, it doesn't.
What about the water situation? What'd you decide for that?
Woo! Hosing it, baby.
Hosing it? Okay.
I got a hose. I did find a gorgeous, like, vintage sink that I can, it has two drains and two halves. Got it on Facebook Marketplace for $100. And I'm going to put 2 5-gallon buckets below. So,
there you go.
There you go.
I'm sure the water would have added a good chunk of change on there to figure that out.
$17,000 for anybody who's thinking about doing this. Yeah.
Dude, but, just put.
That could be the location of where my water is to where the studio is. But to get running water, $17,000.
Yep. Dude, this is what you need to do. You put your hose in. Put your hose in. Fill up your 5-gallon bucket. Put a fountain pump in that 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah.
Run it into a faucet. Yeah. Boom. Sink.
Yeah. I'm like, that sounds great. That sounds Like, it'll be perfect for me.
I haven't had water in my studio almost ever. Like, what I did in Washington.
Yeah.
I have to walk over to the sink at the, in the my studio space. We have to walk over and we put in a 5-gallon bucket and that's what I use.
Yeah.
So.
I don't have water in mine either. We have a water faucet over in the corner by the kiln and I fill up a 5-gallon bucket for my rinse bucket when I finish throwing and stuff and I just need to clean a little bit off my hands. It's cold water, whatever. I just do it. The clay settles down and I have a bucket for rinsing out my tools when I mix my glazes and, you know, you just have a bunch of those 5-gallon buckets of course they're all cat litter buckets over here, but, they're just around the studio and that's what you do. I mean, I get it if you're teaching and you have students and you have to clean splash pans and all that shit, like running water in the sink is needed,
that's a different situation.
But individual artists, I don't know that a running water in a big sink and all that, especially if you're doing it for hooking up in the studio, like I don't know that it's worth that investment.
That's straight luxury.
It is luxurious. It's also like for peace of mind, I don't really hate it just because getting clay in your sink drain is such a scary thing to me.
Right.
That, like, having my quote-unquote, you know, my sink, you know, drain into a 5-gallon bucket and me not having to worry about my pipes, I'm like,
Like, you know exactly I'm where it's going and you know where you're going to dump it, probably.
Yep, I sure, like, I'm totally fine with that. And not spending $17,000 to have that situation. I'm pretty at peace with that. I have no regrets.
I'm curious with the Kickstarter. How did you decide that a Kickstarter was right for you? And was it a tough decision to officially make that versus saying otherwise the alternative would be I need to just save a bunch of money and just stockpile it little by little by little by little by little. And
I did have that moment where, you know, when Kurt downsized and when I was let go, I immediately lost the incentive to drive that far to get my work done. And so it was like, okay, identify the issue. The issue is my time spent traveling to get my work completed. And also relying on the generosity and the kindness of others. I hit my limit, like, of doing that for 7 years, you know?
Yeah.
I made it work as long as I could, but I do not think it's realistic for me growing my business. Because it's not really fair, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like I'm going into these other artist studios who are also running their own business, and then I'm kind of asking them to help me run mine, you know? Like, it's just, I personally, for me and the growth that I want for my brand, I don't think that is realistic. And so when I identified that issue, it was like, cool, home studio. And again, I am a do it once, do it right type of person. And so, I could have built a little tin shack for a kiln. And that would have done it. But, like, I don't want the clay in my house. I don't want the clay with my HVAC system in my home. I would like my bedroom back, you know? Like, I live in a pretty small house. So, like.
Can confirm.
And one of the bedrooms is the studio currently, right?
One is the, like, making studio, yes. And then the other one is the, like, packing. The room that I'm in now is where all the finished work is, all the packaging materials, the photography happens all in this room.
Boxes, everything like that. Yeah, okay.
Which, like, worst case scenario, if that still has to stay in the house, I could live with that. I don't, if that's, like, if I really can't.
It's kind of a nice separation. Maybe the old making studio becomes your packing and shipping
room. Exactly.
But it's clean, at least.
Yeah, exactly. I just, like, I want the clay out of my home. And so it was like, why would I spend like 10 grand getting a concrete pad slab poured for the kiln, for this, like, tin shack to get the electric out to there, Like, just do it right. And again, because I have only been able to use other people's kilns, for me, it was like, I don't think I can make enough in a timely manner. Like, I want to get this shit started ASAP. So that's why the Kickstarter made sense for me. I also did a raffle back in September to get the, like, get things started. I raffled off 3 of my most expensive pieces. That would have made me, had they sold normally on my website, I would have made $600 from them. The raffle that people participated in made me $1,200. So that, yeah. So that's an option for people who are like thinking of going down this route. I do think like making a super exclusive item for a raffle, that worked out really well for me. I feel like it would work out really well for other people too.
So you made them specifically for that. It wasn't just pieces that hadn't sold that you were like, okay, I want to sell these in a raffle.
It was. They were like my 3 most expensive pieces that I've ever made. And they were just on my website. And they, I could tell by my analytics on the website that people really liked them because they were always consistently from month to month, they were being the most viewed, but they weren't selling. So that allowed me to be like, oh, okay, so people like them. It's the price point. But I'm not going down on the price point because I know what I put into them and I know what they're worth. And so by raffling them, it was nice because a lot of people were able to put in $5 and hopefully win this piece that was $250. That's actually literally what happened. Like one of the
It was one raffle and then you picked 3 winners of everybody that enrolled in the raffle.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 1, 2, 3, they got to pick in the order that their name was picked out of the raffle, and that's how it was. Nice. Yeah, and truly, one of the winners put in $5. Like, that's awesome.
That's the risk you run, yeah. Nice.
I think it's so neat. So I did a raffle. I did the Kickstarter because I knew with Denver weather, like, I wanted to get things started before the ground froze over.
Smart.
Yeah. And I didn't, like, I just wanted to get things started as soon as I could, honestly. Like, because I identified what was holding up my shit, what was holding up my growth. And, like, yes, a lot of it was my own personal not wanting to constantly be driving. But, again, if that's the holdup, how do you fix the holdup? Well, you fix it by getting your own kiln. So yeah, for me, the Kickstarter made the most sense, and I still did, I think, 2 sales. So I did the raffle. I think I did 2 sales and I did the Kickstarter with all of that money going specifically to the studio build out / the kiln. Yeah. And then I had about $14,000 in personal savings that I put into the studio as well.
Because the Kickstarter, the way it works is you have to fully fund. It has to be fully funded before you get the money. Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
How did you decide what that total number was going to be?
Because
you have X number of days, right?
I did 30 days. You can do. I think that, like, I don't remember what the presets are, but I did 30. Again, because of my own timeline of just like we have to beat the weather, and that this is what it is. And it wasn't like the best timing. Like, had I not had to be going against the weather, I don't think I would have run a Kickstarter in the month of November. here's my like pro tip for anybody else that is thinking about doing this. Don't do it during the holidays because they're stressful enough and your Kickstarter rewards are not going to be done in time for the holiday season as a gift. Which I think motivates a lot of people, like, for the holidays. That's
it's probably nice to make them after the holidays on your side, right?
Yes. Well, and also, like, for me, like, I've started doing all of the non-ceramic rewards. All of those have been going out. I don't want to make the ceramic in, like, it just seems kind of special to do it in the studio that the pottery, like, the funds were raised for. So, like, the ceramic rewards, I'm waiting for the studio to be done. Like, I don't want to take them somewhere else. Like, I want them to be made here and fired here because it's like a very special moment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have the option. I know I can. Like,
you could probably make the greenware, some of the greenware.
Oh, I could make it. Like, I feel good making the greenware, like, in the house. Mm-hmm. But, like, I really want it. I want it to be fired here. Like,
right.
You know, in the studio, in the kiln that the funds were raised for. And that might sound silly, but.
No, it doesn't.
It just means something, like, really big to me to, like, have it come full circle.
Yeah. And it's probably also, like, because I would suspect with the Kickstarters, some people take forever to deliver. So it's,
yeah.
And then when you see people selling, they have, like, sales and updates, and you're like, but I haven't got my stuff yet. Like, it's kind of weird. But I would suspect with this time of year doing it, you're probably not going to be doing a lot of sales.
No.
Before the Kickstarter deliveries happen. So it's
that
like.
Out well, I think I do feel like summertime would be really cool for, like, a Kickstarter to happen. Also, like, not to talk politics, but just, like, there were some heavy political issues that literally launched, like, the week before my Kickstarter, or, like, a few days before I was, you know, planning on doing the Kickstarter.
And yeah, so it feels like it's overshadowing, or you're asking, like, for money for...
That was definitely a very heavy decision that I, like, didn't take lightly, but I kind of was like, well, we got to do it.
Yeah, like, you set this goal, and, the Kickstarter's already started, so you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, the alternative is you don't get the money, because I want to say that it doesn't charge you, and as a supporter, I don't think it charges you until it's fully funded, right? So.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. So you asked how I decided on the number 20,000. I debated on, I wanted it to be realistic on what would help me. And what I genuinely needed. Like, I knew that I had the $14,000 saved, and if I could get to $20,000 on Kickstarter, then that would put my number at $34,000, and that just seemed like a good number to me, based off of the $27,000 shed quote that I had received from the contractor.
Yeah. And then the studio, and then Kickstarter takes their fees, and then you've got to deliver the work, and
which
so
I don't think I. Yeah. It's just so complicated when you are promoting a Kickstarter, because there are so many, like, nuances that aren't the most interesting or fascinating thing to explain to a person who might fund the campaign. So, like, I never, like, I didn't want to be like, hey, please donate to this Kickstarter. Because they take 20%, you know, like, you know what I, like, it's just, like, a weird thing. But then, like, you also kind of want to make it known. Like, it's just, like, a really delicate line to walk.
I think that's where we talk about it here and say, hey, if people are honestly thinking about the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Here's what's involved, and here's things you need to consider. Because you also don't want to put a number out there to say, well, I know they're going to take 20%, so I want to raise $30,000. And then it's one of those gray areas of, like, can I actually get to 30,000?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, like, you don't want to set it too low, because maybe you won't be so motivated to raise money if you, like, say I would have set the goal to $10,000. Well, that's super. That's much easier to raise than the 20,000. But maybe I wouldn't have been as motivated to. I mean, like, my cell phone, I hit up almost everybody. I was talking to exes that I haven't talked to in 4 years. Like, straight up. That's, like, you have to hustle. You have to be so vulnerable for a 30-day period, you know? I think I reached my goal maybe 3 or 4 days before the fundraising 30-day limit hit. But, yeah, like, I was... Like, no, you can't have shame about it. Like, I hit up my email subscribers. I was sending DMs to artists on Instagram. A lot of people didn't respond. It did hurt my feelings a little bit because I am a sensitive human. But I know it's not personal. It's a weird fucking thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh,
cool. I never got a DM.
Are you sure?
I don't know.
It's just like an request or something.
That I really wanted to, but I am poor as shit right now.
It's fine. I mean, like,
I probably would have. Like, I'm one of those people that will wait until the very end, and you're not there.
Right.
I'm a pusher.
Well, I think a lot of people were pushers, honestly. The way that, like, the trajectory of it went, it was like, I was, like, freaking out.
I was kind of waiting a little bit. I was thinking about it a couple weeks before, and then I waited, and then I was like, okay. It's
you were part of the push, though. Like, again, a lot of people, I think, were, like, waiting.
And that's fine.
And that's fine. No shit.
Not for your mental health, but it's fine.
Definitely, yeah. No, it was, I had the best support group for the Kickstarter. I really, really did. And it was still the hardest thing that I've ever done. Ever. Without a doubt. Like, I bought a house. I bought a car. Kickstarter. Hardest thing.
Yeah. And it probably gave you a lot of, you had a lot of help building up to that because of all the connections you'd built, the years that you'd been doing it. If you were coming in and you were, let's say you're fresh out of college, you're like, I don't have access to any of my studio anymore, and I'm going to do Kickstarter.
That's actually a really good point.
I'm going to do this and get $10,000 to set up my dream studio because I have no studio anymore. I think it would be way bigger of a struggle for them, and they would be way more discouraged. They're going to they probably won't reach their goal. They might not reach their goal. And then also, I feel like it's a little – I feel like it's tough to just go in and not have any studio access, and then you all of a sudden buy brand new kiln, brand new wheel, brand new – like, you're buying all the top-of-the-line things, and you haven't
– Yeah.
I don't say everybody has to go through that struggle of going through – like going to and from studios and all that, but
or having a kiln in your or a wheel in your kitchen or
I think it builds a little bit of like callus to go through that and figure those things out.
So like I did it for as long as I could while it made smart business sense. And then when it wasn't making smart business sense anymore, it was like, okay, so now what? You know, like I think you're right. There's like, why glorify struggle? You know, like, I don't think you have to struggle to be successful. I also don't think you have to, like, do backbreaking work to be successful. And I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with that, but that's okay. That's just not my mindset or mentality. Now, have I given up hanging out with a lot of friends because I was working on my business? Yes. You know, like, you do the thing that makes sense in the time. But, like, a lot of my friends would just come over and watch me do work. Like, hey, I'm so sorry. I can't leave the studio, but I want to see you. Why don't you come here? And then, like, I'll get my work done and we'll go get some tacos. You know, like, something like that. Like, you figure out which sacrifices make sense for you. But, like, it doesn't have to be, I don't know, like, yes, there's hustle, and you have to be passionate about what you're doing, but it doesn't have to be this, like, back-breaking, I don't know, thing. I don't know. Like, you still want to, like, to me, clay is the happiest thing on this earth. So why would I turn the happiest thing on this earth into something that I start to, like, have negative feelings about, you know? Like, I don't want to... Yeah. If I'm choosing to do the happiest thing, then I should be happy doing it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and if you feel good about walking away from the studio for a couple of days and going and spending time with friends or going and seeing family or whatever, and it gives you more invigorated and motivated when you get into the studio, then it's like, it's good to have that balance.
Yes, balance is so crucial. Yeah, like... Yes, you have to hustle, but you also have to take care of yourself. And there's no, like, you shouldn't feel guilty or shame for doing that. Because mm-hmm. you think of anybody else who has a good career, like, they're doing the same thing, you know? It's just, it looks a little bit different when you still have a full-time job and you're trying to get your hustle to be your full-time job. Things just look a little different.
Yeah. So do you personally put timelines on that transition, or do you just have a, is it just a feeling? Let numbers dictate it, and that's just what you're gonna, how you're gonna make that happen?
I think I'm gonna do numbers, let the numbers dictate it, and not like I need to be out by July 2024. Like, I'm not, that's just not how I work. But I do look at numbers. And so actually this is like a pretty cool segue. Like, this was an epiphany I had. I think I shared it on Threads. I'm pretty positive I did. But like, my number is 10,000. I want to make $10,000 a month from pottery. And that is not a small number. And I'm okay with that. I'm going to say that number because that's what I want to make to leave the restaurant industry. And I don't feel shame about that number. Okay. But I don't have that. Once again, I don't have that, like, I don't have that proof. Right. So if I'm typically doing 1500, well, I can't have a like consistent $1,500 months or consistent $2,000 months. And then immediately decide, I want to do $10,000 a month. That's not how that's going to happen. Like, you have to grow. So, like, I have a staggered growth so that by the end of this year, by the end of this year, I will be having $10,000 a month. But it will take me the entire year to grow to that. So that is my goal. And I'm going to do everything in my possibility to do that. So each month I have a goal. I already hit January and we are what?
24 days into it. We still got about a week left.
So I hit January's goal yesterday. My goal for January was to sell $2,000 worth of product. And I did that. And I feel really good about it because I didn't actually put new work on my website. That makes sense. So that was I did my second sale of inventory that was slightly flawed, or I like to call it imperfect. And then I just had some other pieces from the holidays that were on the website that didn't sell, and those sold. So my goal for January was $2,000. My next goal is a 2-month period. So from February to March, my goal is $4,000. So just
however you need to do to get $4,000 between those 2 months. So if it's a $1,000 and a $3,000, that's fine.
Yep, 100%. And the thing is, it's like when you have these achievable goals, like I know that I can hit $2,000 pretty comfortably for when I do a launch. Like that I know it's going to happen. So I'm really celebrating that in January I hit $2,000 without doing a launch. Like, that feels great to me. February and March, I do plan on doing a March. I do plan on doing a launch. Don't know when. Sometime, eventually. But somewhere in that 2-month period, I will be. And so in those 2 months, I got to make $4,000. Technically, it's the same goal, right? It's just giving myself a longer period. So it's just like playing around with those numbers and those goals and seeing what works for you. And then I think I did another 2-month period after that, and I don't remember what my number is, but I am slowly growing myself up that by December, I will make $10,000 a month in December from my pottery.
Nice. I think you've got to know how, you know, what goes into making $2,000 a month, and then what goes into making $3,000 a month. Like, you have to have some data around months where you have done it, and then what did you do to do that?
It's also forming those habits. right? Like, I don't have those habits formed to make the amount of pottery that a 10K month would require. But I know that I can form the habits of a 2K month to a 3K month. And from a 3K month, okay, I can form new habits to get to that 4K month. Like, you can leap, but you gotta be realistic with yourself. Like,
right.
A 2K to 10K, and not only that, but then maintaining 10K, that's not realistic. It just isn't. You know? That's not me being negative. That's not me not believing in myself. That's just fucking reality.
Yeah. And it helps that the 10K is at the end of the year, which is the highest shopping season of the year.
Exactly.
So you know what to be prepared for. You have some information behind you of what people are most buying at that time of year from your shop updates that you've been doing.
And from the analytics that I've been gathering for the greater part of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I think November, I think my goal is 8K, or it's either 8 or 9K. In October, it's a little less than that. But, like, that's not, like, I do have some heavy hitting months in the future before that 10K.
Yeah.
But the plan is that by then, by October, I'm 10 months into forming these habits. Because right now, I don't have those habits for a 9K month.
Yeah. I was looking at last year. It looks like October was my best month.
Was it? Did you do a lot of shows or what?
12,200 almost.
Fuck yeah. I love that.
I think I did the Madison Chautauqua show, which was a
good one.
About $5,000 show.
Hell yeah.
Coffee Festival. I did a
Coffee
big.
Coffee Festival's great for us.
Wholesale order. And Etsy was about 1,100. Yeah, it looks like I got, it was kind of a mixture.
But I also love that.
Three shows.
I love the advice that you shared with me on Thread. So I do want to say that too. I know that this podcast is going for forever.
I like the dynamic of it with the questions and the back and it's different than normal.
I love the advice you gave me because I posted a question because I have an Etsy page that gets, I would say, zero traffic. Well, I guess I could see. And I had been debating, like, is this even worth it? I just don't know. And I also have the Shopify. So in the last 7 days, it looks like my Etsy page has 4 views and I've had 3 visits. $0 in revenue. Okay. That's pretty standard, I would say. Mm-hmm. And you gave me the advice, keep the Etsy and have it be more streamlined products. Is that what the advice was?
Basically having, we talked about this with,
Rebecca
yesterday, having products that will live a long time. And what we mean by that is not something that will not sell, but something that is in high quantity that is reproducible, that you can, and with you doing mold slipcast stuff, that's what you do. So, and maybe it's a baseline or a core collection or something like that, that you can reproduce and you can sell what's available. And then when it sells out, you can restock it and just put that same listing back up. And I think Etsy will reward
you. Keep it simple for yourself.
That you have pieces
that
live.
Keep it stupid simple.
Yes, I love it. I love that you, because right now the inventory that I have on my Etsy is exactly not that. It's all like,
what is the Etsy shop? I was trying to look it up, but I don't know.
Are you trying to find it? Yeah, honestly, I'll take any tips and tricks that you want to send my way. It's
apparently Rebecca. Oh, go on.
Oh, it's called Pazful Designs Studio. I've had one sale. I don't know how long I've had it up.
Rebecca, I guess Cara, she's did really well. And I think it was a lot of like research on what words are popular.
Ooh.
She uses it for SEO. She doesn't actually try to drive people there at all. She actually changed the name of the shop so that when people Googled her company name, it didn't show the Etsy page because she wants people going to her website
instead of the Etsy. I think I have it in my biography on my Etsy page. Like, here's my website.
It's not on your Instagram though. Your Instagram goes right to your website. So.
True. But I have the same pieces on my website that I do on the Etsy. But I should have. You think I should have both links?
No, I just think it's like if you were at shows, were at shows, you could do different things, but. I think in one way, Etsy is a credible source for people because they don't have to set up an account and they don't have to buy from another website.
Sure.
But also, they're comfortable with it. And
basically, she was saying, like, when you buy on Etsy, you never say, oh, I bought it from this account. You say, I bought it on Etsy.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's kind of the counter. But I think it's still... It's still doable.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. We are just interrupting the program because we want to talk about one of our other sponsors, a brand new sponsor to us, Speedball Ceramics. And I'm going to let Ryan talk about a few things that are happening at Ensica, and then I'll come back and tell you what you can find there as well.
All right. So if you're going to stop by Ensica in Richmond in late March, we'd love to see you there. Speedball is going to have a booth at the vendor hall. It's booth number 208. And Becca, myself, and Erica, my studio assistant, we're going to be demoing on Thursday from 2 to 4. You'll definitely want to stop by their booth a number of times throughout the conference. Last year, they had a bunch of bats that were just piled up, and they were giving those away. So definitely hit those booths early if you're in the vendor hall, and we'd love to see you. So come by.
Yeah, they are also going to have the brand new mid-fire glazes that they just came out with, like, I think only a couple months ago. And they'll also have their underglaze out as well. And what's cool about the underglaze is that they just came out with a new formulation that they announced. So that'll be exciting to kind of see how that compares to the old formulation and just to see all the colors and also to meet all the people at Speedball and see how lovely they are. And so you can understand why we love them so much.
Yeah, there's so many demo presenters throughout the day. They just shared the list with us recently, and it's, you know, there's like 4 to 5 people demoing each day, or maybe more than that. There's just so much going on. So definitely stop by the booth, booth 208 at Ensica. If you're not going to Ensica, you can still check out their website, speedballart.com. See what's going on over there. They've got a lot of info in there.
And they sell through Clay King, and they sell through Blick. So, yeah, it's nice to be able to buy from a regular art store, too, if you're in a big city. So, yeah, cool. Thanks, and hope you like the rest of the show.
I wonder if having the, I would say don't have the thumbnail with the stick, with the number on the sticker number on the thumbnail picture. Put that maybe one of the later ones.
Okay.
Just from first glance, I'm like, okay, well, that tells me. That number means something to you. I know it means something to you as the seller.
My AirPods just died, so I'm going.
But it's rogue. It could be confusing if you're looking at it in a list, a grid of a bunch of other pieces, and you're like, why is that number there?
I love that advice, and I'm going to take it.
But they're photographed well
because I don't absorb anything.
But they're photographed well.
Thank you.
I think having the, if you can have the same, and it can feel a little draining that you have to make the same thing over and over if you're more of a, hey, I like to mix the designs up and they're not going to be identical.
No, I think I want both, though. Like, I think what you're saying makes sense. Like, having Etsy be, like, the more, almost like wholesale line of work, and then having my website be dedicated, because like I said, all of the stuff that's on the Etsy right now is the stuff that takes a lot of time. It's mm-hmm. the more unique one-off pieces, so letting my website do that stuff and then the Etsy just being like the real streamlined, I love that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I can see these mugs on your website, the creamsicle tie-dye mug with a glaze. I could see that selling well and catching people's eyes on Etsy. besides the really fancy ones. Plus, it gives you a range of prices. So they're like, I really love this $90 mug, but I can't afford $90. But I can afford this really cool $65 one that's got the essence of what I'm looking for, but the price point is something I can more afford.
You're absolutely right.
And I'm sure the creamsicle one is way easier to reproduce.
Yeah.
There's
no hand cramps in that. All of the ones that are on the Etsy page right now, literally hand cramp. All of them. Those are my hand cramp designs. Because I am waiting to splurge on something that I know Renee has. Becca, you might have
hairpin?
Yeah.
Worth it.
I believe you. I know it is. It's just I'm pacing myself.
You know, I also wonder on Etsy, and I think this could just be a bread and butter thing. Like, you could just slip cast that white mug and do a white glaze, and that's an option.
Oh, I think you're absolutely correct.
That could do well.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with just having something that pays the bills.
No. Well, and the thing is like, I want to get into making big coil pots. I want to make big freaking coil pots so badly. And nobody would know that looking at my current line of work. But, like, that's what's inside of me.
Yeah.
I just gotta do it.
Yeah. I think these catch-all dishes would do well on Etsy.
Oh,
I can see you putting...
Ryan, you are so great.
Catch-all... some of the bud vases could be these small white vase diffuser, like that picture is perfect for Etsy, honestly.
Oh my God. Thank you, Brian. This is wonderful.
And I would suspect the catch-all dish, I could see that. I picture that being, okay, you have a catch-all dish. It's a listing. You have four colors on the catch-all dish. You stack the four up. You prop the top one forward so they can see what the inside looks like. That's your thumbnail photo right there.
Yeah.
And then you have X number of them in each color.
Yeah.
And then as they sell, you just replenish them. And it's okay if some of them are sold out. That's fine.
Sure.
But you just replenish them when you can. But that listing will live a long time. That $20 catch-all dish is going to make you a lot of money.
Ryan, thank you so much. I feel so much better about my Etsy page. I hope that this information also helped other people too, because it's so weird because it's like you feel like you're smart. Well, no, I am. But like you're like, okay, I have business sense. But now like in this simple conversation, you're addressing these things that like for whatever reason I'm just like missing. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just love that. Like the power of this conversation and the transparency. It just, I don't know. It just makes me so happy to be part of the clay community, honestly. I think in my mind, I was like, well, these mugs aren't selling and these are my favorite pieces. So like, why should I even bother putting other stuff on if these six things aren't getting attention?
I think you get the simpler pieces, because a lot of people are going to be, they're going through the search of Etsy and they're stumbling upon you. So they're seeing your pieces next to other things. They also see the price right there when they see it. So,
sure.
You know, what's going to cause them to click it. So it's likely they don't even know you. If they do know you, they're going through your Instagram and they're clicking on your website. They're not going to your Etsy. So, I think the catch-all dishes, the oil diffuser, the simple white bubble mug.
Yeah.
Even though it's more expensive than probably most other mugs that people would see on there, it could be enough to catch their eye. And then they go to your shop and maybe the price point's attractive and they see your other things and they're like, oh, there's fancier versions of this.
Right.
And, I think the catch-all dishes, those small purchases will help you get more trust from your customers in Etsy, and Etsy will reward you with helping you show up higher in searches.
Yes.
It will get you reviews, which I think also helps you in the Etsy algorithm. It proves that customers had purchased from you, you met their expectations, and they trusted you and left you a review. So they rewarded you by doing things well.
Yeah.
And then your consistency of shipping things out on time has an effect. Right. If you're willing to do that and you can get that like star seller thing, I mean, that's like a ways away, but you know, once you get some sales, as long as you're, you know, delivering them on time, you're pricing them well, the shipping is taken care of appropriately, and you know, you're meeting customers' expectations. It's just like shows. Like, you go to shows, you talk to people, you have them buy things, they go home, they enjoy it, they feel like it was a valuable purchase.
Yep.
And then they'll come back and see you. And hopefully it leads to another purchase down the road. Or, hey, I need to get a gift for somebody, and I really love using your jewelry dish that's on my nightstand.
Yep.
And I want to get one of those for my friend.
Right.
And it's a cyclical relationship.
Right.
And it's like I'm dropping breadcrumbs all over the city whenever I'm going to these shows. And there's people that just crop up, you know, it could be 2 or 3 years down the road from when I first interacted with them and they bought something from me. But I still remember them and I still make this connection. And you kind of need all those little breadcrumbs to make your business successful over time.
Right. When do you have a date or a number? I should reverse the question that you asked me.
I thought I had a date. So my date initially was going to be last April of 2023.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the main reason for that was the company I worked for, I had restricted stock units with the company, which is they gave me shares of stock that vested over X number of years. And the final pot of money of stock vested at that time. And it was going to be like 10 grand or 20 grand or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, I'll get that stock and then I'll sell it and I'll make 10 to 20 grand. And then that'll give me a longer runway and it'll fuel that fire to push me to be able to make the jump.
Mm-hmm.
We got there. I did it. Got the money, whatever. And it wasn't enough because I think it was I learned that the job satisfaction is the main driver for me. It's not the money.
Yeah.
I was also thinking that, okay, when the pottery business, I can make 100 grand, it'll give me confidence that I can go up from there and I'll have enough. But I mean, Becca knows I have like, I save a ton of money. So I have way more than most, like my business savings is probably way more than most people have in their business savings to do it full time.
Right.
That are doing it for a bit. So it's not a number thing for me, but that also has come about because I've been able to work in a career where I make really good money and I've been able to save a shitload of money.
Right.
You know, we've paid off our cars. We don't have debt except monthly credit card debt that we pay off every month. Then we pay our mortgage and there's not a lot of things that we need to pay for.
Right.
Yeah.
I've got all my equipment. So for me, it's a job satisfaction thing.
Yeah.
When my job reaches a point where I'm not as satisfied with the work I'm doing and and I'm pulled to the ceramics more and more and I'm being expected to do something that I don't really want to spend time doing. And I'm going to work and I'm feeling like, God, I don't want to be doing this and I want to be doing that.
Yeah.
And it just has to be worth it for me to take that financial hit to make the jump.
Sure. Yeah.
Or I get laid off. I mean, honestly, I was saying, because our company just had some layoffs recently. And I was like, honestly, am I not going to leave until I get laid off? I'm like, would that be the time?
Yeah.
And
he's not going to get laid off. He's not getting laid off. His freaking company loves him.
No, I don't think I would. But it's such a good flexible spot that I'm in.
Yeah.
Work from home. We have unlimited PTO. I think I was telling somebody I took like 45 days of PTO last year.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like, and I don't feel guilty about it. I'm like, hey, my manager is like, hey, if you want to take PTO, take PTO. Don't worry about it. Well, we're not saving lives here.
Concept that a lot of businesses run on, not mine, but like a lot of careers, the 9-to-5 concept, it's bullshit. Like a lot of that time is just spent wasted.
Yeah.
You don't need it.
Yeah, how many hours of actual work am I doing in my 9 exactly, to 5, 40 hours a week?
Yeah, totally.
So.
Yeah, because, I mean, here's the thing. It's, I think the number, people get so glamorized by that final number, 95,000, as they should, in my opinion. I think that's a great number. But then the number that's a little more scary is the expenses, right? And that's with you not having to buy any equipment. And that's also super low. Your expenses are still super low. And then when you do the math, it's like, huh, so I didn't put 95,000 into my bank account. You know, like, that's not. Like,
yeah. The expenses were 37,000. So 37,000. I technically profited about 58,000.
Yeah. Which then when you do that as an annual income, that's not as great. That's not great.
I mean, it would probably be okay in Kentucky, but not in Denver, I would think.
Not in Denver. I can tell you right now, not in Denver. Yeah. And then Miss Van just chuckles.
I chuckled, but also Andrew just got home and he goes, "You're still in the podcast? You cannot have 3 hour long podcasts."
This might have, wait, have you guys ever done a two-parter?
I don't like two-parters. I don't like releasing in two parts.
I consume podcasts like they are about to expire. Look, sign me up for a two-parter, three-parter. Oh, I love them. I can't wait.
Oh, I mean, we'll have people back, but I don't like two-parters as in, like, we take this audio and we cut it in two parts. And release them over 2 weeks. I don't want to do that.
I support it all.
Honestly, it might be a good idea.
Monday, Tuesday. Why do you have to wait a week? You don't have to wait a week.
Yeah,
we release them. We have to wait a week.
We release them every Saturday.
Why?
Because I will go crazy.
Are these self-restricted rules?
Well, these are Becca needs to have more podcasts, less interviews.
We've been interviewing the shit out of people this month.
Have you?
We're basically turning into Paul Blaze this month.
I think I want to start a podcast, but I don't want to compete with you guys.
You should
start one.
Okay, all right, I'll do it.
You have a good voice for a podcast.
Oh, thank you. I'm honored.
You're very articulate.
I don't know if I told the story on the podcast.
Becca is dying.
I think she's laughing.
Dying. At her. Why are you?
Andrew's doing
I'm
something
so
off
sorry.
Camera.
Andrew can make a guest appearance on this two-parter.
We had a whole situation about these fucking oranges, these Cara oranges, and he just cut it open, and it's a fucking.
It's grapefruit.
Are you sure it's grapefruit or is it just pink?
Wait, car oranges are really red in the inside.
They are really red.
That's expected.
I have no idea what these oranges are.
It looks like a blood orange, basically.
Really it's delicious oranges.
They sound wonderful.
Really. And then we couldn't figure out how to, like, put them in the self-checkout without paying for organic.
Oh.
And then I bought heirloom tomatoes instead of regular ones.
Oh, man. Those were expensive, I bet.
Yeah, it was more than the organic.
Couldn't you just ring those things up as Roma? Like,
I don't know. The guy was standing right there.
Oh, okay.
Well,
sorry, okay. I'm crying.
My story was that I was at dinner with Rachel and her family for her, like, a dinner, and my father-in-law asked me, he was like, "Hey, I heard you shared about your results last year. That's impressive. What made you want to share the numbers? Like, what are you sharing the numbers for?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Well, I've been sharing the last couple of years. It's useful for other potters to know what's realistic and what, you know, what's possible." And that's why I do it. So, but he's kind of kind of like my parents. They're in the generation where they're like, you know, you keep
that very reserved.
Best and
well, but you inspired me, because you shared those numbers and you, like, I have a job where I can take 45 days off, you know, just like you do. So if you can do $95,000 from your hustle while having a full-time job, like, you inspired me to, like, wake up and have a reality conversation with myself to be like, you can do it too. You know, like, there, like, I think I got very comfortable saying that I couldn't do it because I, you know,
right.
And I think that's a lot easier to justify with yourself when you're not making those goals that you want to be. And so you sharing your numbers, like, for me, that was like the huge, like, the biggest wake up call that I could have, like, gotten to truly, like, light the fire under my ass again. Like, you don't know that I got so comfortable doing what I was doing and accepting that that's just what I had to do. And that's just what it was. And now, granted, yeah, our circumstances are completely different. And that's why I'm so excited to get the kiln at my house. So that, like, I can multitask and I don't have to coordinate and I don't have to drive and all, you know.
You control a lot when you have the studio, you have the kiln, you can choose when you want to do things, you choose how you want to run your own studio.
Yes. But that's why when I saw those numbers, I just got so excited because I have been feeling so down and sad because I'm like, I just don't know how to get out of this restaurant industry. And that's what I want. And there's no shame for people who want to stay in the industry. That's just not my personal desire. My personal want is to be a full-time artist. And so for you to post those numbers while you have that full-time job, like, to me, that was very inspiring. And, like, that would not have happened had you not posted that.
Love it.
Tell your father-in-law that. Boom.
Well, it also sparked this conversation, which I think is going to help way more people than just you and I talking about it.
I hope so. I really do. Like, yeah, I really, really do. Because, again, having, like, your own, having a private studio can sometimes be a bit isolating. And I do love the community aspect of clay. So I really hope that other people find inspiration in their own journey.
Sweet. And then we'll have you on next time when you've got a year from now. And then we'll check on how it went.
I can't wait. Met
those goals. What's changed? Where you're...
I'm so excited for the year to come. I hope other people are excited for their own year to come.
Yeah. And obviously you could get down because you're like, oh, there's a lot of other things outside of my business going on and election season and all this stuff. But it's like, focus on what you can control. And, like, honestly, I just say block out as much as you can because you have a lot of control of what.
Yeah.
What the results that you can get out of your own business. So, like, honestly, absolutely. Try to put your phone down and get out of that.
I took TikTok off of my phone and the amount of free time I have in my life is just, like, kind of gross. I mean, it's great, but it's, like, gross when you're like, damn, TikTok took up a lot of space.
Yeah. Becca, I stopped playing the township game for probably a week or so. I was like, oh, I'm going to try to get away from it for a bit.
What is this township game?
Oh, don't play. Don't start.
Is it on Switch? Or?
No, it's just a phone game.
Oh, don't.
It's like a city. It's like a, think of like a Sim City for your phone. It's like a.
Yeah, amazing. But for farms. And it's like really addictive. I only.
You can, but I'm not going to be on it.
You can.
Okay. I'll give it up.
I only play it.
Time management.
Yeah.
I only play it when I'm going to the bathroom. And when I'm about to sleep.
I was playing it way too much.
Okay, I'm not even. Oh, that and was I my was, dog Luna.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to enter temptation.
I mean, I still pick up Instagram all the time. It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard not to, but like it is kind of like I have been trying Necessary to cut evil. Back on my screen time, and I have noticed that my mental health significantly better. Like, which
and then I'm like, okay, do I trade Instagram for Threads? And you know, then you're on Threads posting stuff or scrolling. And I'm like,
okay, I still don't know what I'm doing on Threads. I have no idea.
I don't use Threads.
I love it, but I'm utterly confused by it. I don't know.
I never used Twitter, so I don't.
See, it's different than Twitter/X. I was on Twitter/X for forever, but I would just post the most random shit, get zero interaction. But, like, also I wasn't motivated to get interaction. I don't really know. Maybe I didn't get Twitter either. I don't know. Now I'm like, Threads for me is more business posts versus personal posting.
Oh, yeah.
But it does seem, sometimes it just seems a little, I don't know. Like, there's always, like, artists for artists. Follow me back and I'll follow you. And
I'm looking for artists.
I'm an artist looking for another artist.
You were going hard in there. You were posting comments on a bunch because the people you follow, you see the post that they're commenting on. So
I was, and then I realized going
hard on those.
I was, and then I was like, I think this is fake. Like, I think this is like not real.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kind of like, I think Gary Vee said at one point, you drop your 2 cents all over the place. So you're putting like 2 cents in everywhere.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. So you can kind of spread that engagement.
Yes.
And then rather than like posting and ghosting and getting out of there and not even engaging with anybody or whatever, but.
Well, right. Cause like you gotta engage.
Mm-hmm. Right? And then I'm like, are those people just trying to like get more? I don't know. So I just try to post what I want on there.
Threads to me is like the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
But I do feel like that's how you and I really started to connect, was through Threads.
Yeah.
There, you and I did find a really cool, another art coach that posts like really cool content for small business owners, not just artists, predominantly artists, but entrepreneurs, small business owners. And her and I connected, and then it turned out we had like an actual real life friend in common. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a vapid place, but sometimes you find really cool, genuine friendships.
Yeah.
I think we should end it on that.
Yeah. All right. Where can people find you? What? All the tags of where people find you and your sign off information.
Thank you for bringing it back in. Everywhere Pazful Designs, PAZFUL Designs. It is Spanglish. It translates to be peaceful designs. So Facebook, Instagram, Threads. My website, Pazful Designs, and Etsy, Pazful Designs Studio, I think. I don't know.
Nice. Put a cover photo and a image on your Etsy, too.
Okay, I can't figure it out.
I see your picture on there, but I
cannot figure it out. Because I do everything through my phone. So if I can't do this shit on my phone, and...
You might have to do that on the computer.
Do you?
Maybe.
I keep on hitting the thing. I keep on hitting it to update the photo, and it doesn't do anything.
It's under, like, info and appearance, I think, under the settings. I don't know.
I know. I got to do it on my computer is so old that I had to download Skype on my iPad because I can't download it on my laptop because... I was the type of individual, this is actually really great parting advice. If your laptop says that it's ready for an update, do not hit the button, remind me tomorrow. because tomorrow will become 4 years. And then you can no longer update your laptop, which otherwise should be running just fine. So that is my advice, because that's what I did.
That's good advice.
Thank you. Yeah, so now, like, I'm truly, like, I think a Shopify update away from, like, not even being able to do Shopify on my computer.
Oh, because it sounds like you might need to get a desktop at some point and invest in it for the business down the road.
I think if I take everything completely off the laptop, then I can take it to the Apple store and they can put in the updates. But as it is, my laptop is just so far behind because I just constantly was like, remind me tomorrow. And that's who I am as a person.
Well, sometimes if you update it, it's going to really drain the... I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. I have enough space, but I don't have the space for the installation process.
Yeah.
Real bummer.
Super bummer.
All right. We'll check on that in a year or two.
Yeah. I will still be hitting remind me tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Have so much fun in Richmond.
Should be good. We got quite the schedule coming together, I think. So.
Yeah. I'll be living vicariously through your Instagram posts.
Okay. I get so drained during those that, like, I almost don't post at all, and I'm like, oh.
I feel like I that, should. Too.
But Cincinnati, you're so peopled out. Yeah.
Sacramento, I feel like I was, like, on top of the Instagram updates and shit. Cincinnati, I was having so much fun making, like, in-person, real-life connections that, yeah, I was, like, 100% so drained.
And then you're zoned into your phone, and you're like, I'm missing out on things that I could be making memories right now.
Yeah, like, Cincinnati, it was just so much fun. Like, I just truly felt like I was, like, walking away with, like, being like, that was an awesome conversation. Like, holy crap, I just made a new friend. Like, I love the conference.
Well, love the conference, and you made it to your flight.
Oh, I did.
You made it back home.
Thank you, Lori, for the Pepto-Bismol.
Fucking Pepto-Bismol.
Fucking Pepto. This podcast is brought to you by Dramamine and Pepto-Bismol.
That's right.
And Nerd Clusters.
Yep.
Nerd Clusters. It's going to be the selection. You. It's going to be a Monday mug selection.
I can't wait because I already have it in my brain how I'm going to do it. And it's going to be so cool. And, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm
motivated for it. I can't wait. I'm so glad that you picked Nerd Clusters because that's not one that I have a mold of yet.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Okay.
That'll be good. Love it.
All right.
Cool. Goodbye.
Bye. Thanks everybody for listening.
Good night.
We'll catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of Wheel Talk. This podcast is made possible through the contributions of all of our listeners who always ask us great questions, leave us reviews, and contact with us through social media. Thanks to all the fellow makers as well who take time to be interviewed and share about their lives and businesses.
And thank you to Ashley from Boldover Ceramics and Lindy from Lindy Garner Ceramics for their assistance on the Wheel Talk podcast Instagram. You are invaluable. Thank you to everybody.